to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Lord Run Fake, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Hall. She's Stephanie Coney. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We also have Mr. Frank Fahey. We had an odd market this morning. The Dow futures are down to 150. That's mostly because of Boeing. S&P futures up 3. NASDAQ futures up 19. So, strange morning. Oil up 47 cents. And we've got gold down $3. So, kind of a strange day so far. Frank, how are you?
Good. Good. I had a good weekend. The Irish women looked very strong.
Yes, yes. The interesting part is they have probably a better team than last year. And last year they won the NCAA. Now they're, what, they're ranked fourth or something. A couple of pretty good teams.
Well, they beat number three by 20 points yesterday.
They were, number three was in the ACC as well?
Yes, Louisville.
Well, who's the best team? The Mississippi State? How did they get somebody? How did they get that good all of a sudden?
They've always been fairly good. How does Mississippi or Mississippi State get good at anything?
Well, the one year Baylor had the girl who was, what, 6'7" or something? Mitzi
Brittany Griner.
Yeah, she was special.
Baylor's pretty special this year. They're number one, last I checked.
Okay.
I thought Connecticut, it was too.
Connecticut, imagine that. All right, so would you or Steph wind her out gleefully to the airport and get on a 737 MAX?
No.
In the U.S. I would, but not if I'm going overseas with a foreign pilot or anyone else.
Two down out of 350, that's not good.
No.
I'm saying I'd probably...
And it's a new airplane.
Yeah, I was actually thinking, since I get a load of this, talk about the weird stuff that your buddy does, Frank, meaning me, or would like to do. For those that don't know, there's a place over in Britain called Bletchley Park. That were they anyway? They ended up being where everybody went to break all the Nazi codes during the war. And turns out our buddy Robert at the Fed knows the guy who runs the place, who's a curator, who's actually the son of the person who used to own it. And it's now like a museum area. Anyway, he's an economist, too, so the Fed has invited him over to speak. I said, wow, if I was over there, I bet you could get me one hell of a tour. And he goes, yes, I could. So I've been trying to sneak away a few days to go over one of these days. And I was thinking about flying Icelandic Air, because first class in Icelandic is like the same price as everybody else's regular.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to stop in, you know, Iceland, which would be fine with me. I've never been there. Well, it turns out they retired their 757s, and they're flying these 737 MAX. And I'm thinking, I wouldn't take them now. I would go somewhere else. I have no desire.
Yeah, I read a bunch about the Ethiopian one after it fell out of the sky and they did a bunch of research. It sounds to me like Boeing's got a problem with regards to, they've changed some of the standard practices with regards to how it manages certain situations, and it's completely counterintuitive to the way every pilot's been originally taught. So, you know, they get in a panic situation, they go back to what they know, and a lot of pilots have brought this up, so I think Boeing's got to re-look at this.
Well, the idea of, especially a Southwest Air, and for those that don't know, one of the strengths of Southwest Air is they always flew the exact same, well, different levels. There was a 737, 200, 300, 400. But they, I think, and I mean, Steph, you sound like you know a lot about this. I think if you got a pilot that's used to fly in the 300, you could plunk him in a 200, 400, and off he goes. I don't think there's a problem, as long as it's 737.
I mean, the answer is you have to test out on all of them.
Right.
So from a legal perspective or a compliance perspective, they have different things they need to do. But I think, obviously, it's probably like driving a Ford. You know, once you get into a Ford, no matter what level of Ford you're in, you know where most of the buttons are and how most of the features work.
Well, I don't believe, and Frank, help me here, that if you're a 767 pilot and you're at O'Hare, and all of a sudden United has a 757 that you can drop your fanny in it.
I have no idea.
I
would like to address Stephanie's Ford statement. I had a company car at one time, a 1983 Ford Fairmont, and the horn was on the turn signal stock.
Oh, geez.
You had to push in the turn signal stock, so...
You know,
that was another better idea from Ford. So that meant you just hit the person. You never, you know, honked at them.
Well, it saved a lot of people from honking in traffic that probably shouldn't.
No wonder they bought taxi cabs became Fords.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, I think it added a lot to, talk about somebody who didn't want to hear this, my significant other and contributor to the show, Audrey. She was downtown last week because she was help. She also wants to learn how to work the board, so that's fun. But so she hands me a list of about 8 places she's going to go look on the north side. She's looking for a 2-street flat for an investor, right? And so I said, "You realize you just gave me one of the hardest problems there is in math." Of course, she had no interest in that. Just tell me which one to go to first. I said, "No, to do this right." I could never do it anymore. I don't think I could ever do it in college, but it's called a salesman coloring problem. I've talked about this before, but I think it adds to the problem with United and American, with all the different kinds of planes. I don't think a guy who flies the Airbus that you can put him in a 737 or a 757. I don't think they even switch in the Boeing planes. But the idea was, with the 737 at Southwest, a pilot and a plane always worked, I think. Now, you're right, Steph, they probably had to check out on the different model numbers, but... Now, if this particular new one, if that breaks that, that's not what these airlines want.
No, well, from reading on this I did, because, frankly, I was just interested in finding out what was going on.
And knew you were going to be on the show.
Actually, it's coincidental, but nevertheless, comes in handy, apparently. They have changed, it's the whole procedural way and the way the plane behaves is completely different than...
Now, why?
The answer is nobody can explain that in anything that I read. So...
It has something to do with tail lift.
Yes.
And the fact that with this tail lift they have, it has a tendency to push the nose down. My son showed me a...
simulation.
A YouTube video about it last night, and it really outstripped everything I know about aerodynamics in about 30 seconds. I'll see if I can track it down.
Well, you do get some lift from the tails. You used to get a lot more, like those DC-3s and stuff. The tails were huge.
Yeah, but see, a lot of these planes, and especially they've done this a lot with the military planes, they are not, they're not aerodynamically... They wouldn't stay in the sky if you didn't have a lot of the software that's with them, right? And so there are a lot of things that are counterintuitive in the way they behave as a result. And I don't know the details, but...
Somehow the software controls the nose level.
Right.
You know, up or down, it balances nose and tail. Beyond that, I don't really understand how it works. It appears that maybe a Boeing programmer didn't either.
Yeah.
Well, I was reading something once about the 757 versus the 737. For most people, notice 757 was taken out of production 12 years ago, maybe? And because the 737 essentially started to encroach on its territory. But now, Boeing feels they have this hole in the middle of their... There's nothing between a 737 and a 787. So if anybody's old enough, like moi, the original 737s were a lot smaller than the ones are now. I mean, it was a squat little thing. They used to call them fat boys because they looked weird because they were so short and stubby. Well, they've continued to expand the size of the fuselage lengthwise to where it essentially encroached. But this article was all about they've done this with the 737, but they already had a platform. I mean, they wanted to go further, but you can't put much more fuel into it. Plus, it's low to the ground, so you have to have a weird looking thing on the engine because it's too low. But the 757 was just a bigger unit. It was higher. You could put more fuel in it. It was easier to land because you didn't have to worry about scraping engines and stuff. And they should have just kept the 757 instead of pushed the 737 to essentially the maximum degree you can with a plane of that fuselage strength. And it, you know, anyway, so they were saying that maybe this whole, you've reached the limit of how far you can push. For those of you that don't know anything about aviation, Boeing swore, and when they built the 707 in the 50s, somehow or another, that thing was not, you couldn't make it bigger. But every other plane that's been made since then, there's like the original version, and then there's the stretch versions. They keep stretching the darn things. And like a 727, the first ones were short, and they became longer.
Accordion buses.
Yeah, they were like, they just kept making them bigger and bigger. And this one, I don't know, I'm not so sure. But anyway, but Boeing's down a bunch today. We have all kinds of other stuff going on in the market worldwide. Last week was a horrible week, although we came back to pretty much unchanged on the close Friday, which was, I sort of suspected that, although I didn't trade it that way. I was going to buy some stuff on the close, Frank, but I didn't. Dow ended up down 22, and S&P only down 5, but we were down way more than that. But we were down 2% on the week, and so, I mean, it was a crummy week. And now this week doesn't look like it's going to be starting out all that much better. But what do you make of this? Why all of a sudden are we leaking again after having this, you know, huge run since Christmas Eve? There's something you're picking up, Frank, or just general?
What I'm picking up is that the financial news around the world is complaining that they don't have a clue what the Chinese negotiations are.
Right.
The U.S.-Chinese, that they're totally clueless, and that the U.S. has kept Europe entirely in the dark, and it's one of those things where it might be best done if Europe and the U.S. had a united front, the EU specifically, against the Chinese rather than the U.S. going alone.
This going alone part is very strange. What's Cheney's daughter? Did you see her ripping on Trump this weekend? Because he actually wants to charge all the places that the U.S. military still has bases. He wants to charge the home country full retail plus 50% to keep them there. Have you heard that?
No, I didn't.
And she's like ripping on. What are you talking about? Why would we even bring that up there? I guess South Korea was just totally miffed at that when they heard it. They've agreed to up a little bit and pay a little more for the troops we have over there. But the idea of full retail and 50%, I mean, I just hope there's not more New Yorkers in the world to think everybody else has the same attitude toward business and insulting that you have. Because that's not exactly South Side here. Boy, anyway, we just saying.
Well, it came out this morning or last night that at Mar-a-Lago this weekend, Trump said that the Democrats hate all Jews.
I'm not so sure that's true.
I'd say well,
I don't think it's true.
I'm the most passionate white people I know as far as with money. Liberals are Jews.
Yeah, I don't.
And then this morning on the news is coming out that Trump's asking for $8.6 billion for the wall in the 2020 budget, and then one of the economic advisors came out and said, hey, wait a second, what about fiscal conservatism? So, I mean, we need to look at our balanced budget. So there seems to be a lot of things flying, as usual. But from a financial perspective, we seem to be throwing more things in than there were before.
Why
Brexit wasn't enough.
Why do you suppose that virtually everybody everywhere is talking about economies around the world slowing? Is it something... Is this a self-inflicted wound? Is this just part of the business cycle and the timing is there? Is it true? It's kind of hard to get a finger on it, but it does appear that the actual, business is slowing. I mean, here and other places. I mean, can you think of a quote reason, or is it just a...
I mean, personally, without looking at the fundamentals, I think it has a lot to do with uncertainty. We've been in a place where there was quite a lot of certainty and everyone was confident in what the policies and procedures were around the world. It's an easy place to make decisions from a business perspective. It allows you to grow, allows you to make decisions that you can stick with for a while. The amount of uncertainty we've had over the last 2 years and then watching it increase, I mean, to your earlier point, nobody knows. Do we even know what was discussed in the Chinese discussions?
No, nobody knows.
Do we have anyone that was in the State Department that actually participated?
Does anybody know what happened in NAFTA?
No. Does anyone know what
happened? Does anybody know what Putin and Trump talked about?
Exactly. So, I mean, I think we're to a point where between that and Brexit, and then all the, you know, we've got a debt increasing, and that's just our economy. The Chinese are having economic issues.
I think the Chinese economy is in real bad shape.
Yeah,
I mean, I think the debt load is starting to hit people. It's hard. The reason why I keep asking other folks, although I know you guys are from around here, is you get such an odd view of the world when you think of Chicago and Illinois. You know, thank God we have guys like, you know, Kevin and people on. They can talk about other areas of the country that are actually better. But, Frank, you were talking about, by the way, I got one for, I know Maddie would have missed this one this weekend because he was probably out enjoying himself. By the way, I did have a cocktail with Maddie and his lovely, girlfriends Friday night. It's always fun. We'll see, be able to talk to Jill instead of Matt, find out what he's doing wrong and so forth. You know?
That's right.
But it was a good time. Hey, Maddie, did you see that, this is a strange story, that, Babe Ruth's daughter died at 102. His last surviving.
I did see that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was weird. I hate to even go there, but he married what? Her mother when she was 12, and he adopted her. And she was, would be very upset if you referred to him as her stepfather. An interesting reason as to why, Frank, or Maddie. Maddie, you're a sports guy. Why was that, other than just they're not liking the word?
I don't know.
Somewhere along the line, Steph, she had some kind of this is going back a long time. She had some sort of a medical issue and needed a blood transfusion. And the only person who was a match was the babe. And so he ended up giving her the blood transfusion, and her attitude was, he not only adopted me and became my father, he saved my life. I don't want to use the word stepfather.
Okay. I thought it was, now I get it. So she called him dad.
Yep.
Okay. I thought it was the other way around, that she just didn't want, okay.
No, the immediate thought goes to my mind is, God, with all the action Babe got, you have to wonder. it's a horrible thing to say, but anyway.
You weren't alone, Tom.
Did you ever read, Mike Reich always talked about Babe Ruth, and the best line was, Steph, you'll love this. He said he was a tireless drinker, smoker, and lover. Imagine how good he could have been if he didn't waste all that time playing baseball.
Yeah. Just a pastime.
Yeah, just a pastime. But there was a Sports Illustrated thing about his roommate.
That had to be a tough role.
Well, he said the guy, he never saw him. He'd go to a town and the babe's bags would go in a room and he wouldn't see him for the whole weekend. Because every town he went, he knew of a lady, knew of something, had a friend who had a friend, had a plan, whatever. He said he absolutely was tireless. And, anyway, but he was an interesting character, but that's another one. But did you guys, I promise to be very, brief with this. Maddie, cut me off if I get too much, but there's a article here, and I'll push it off to Manny, but it's in CNBC. It says a mysterious payment to Paul Manafort's lawyer reveals a hidden chapter of Trump's 2016 presidential campaign. Now, I'm not, I could care less if this is right, left, or whatever, so all my right-wing friends don't have to jump all over me, but the idea is there's an outfit called Multimedia Services Corp. Its silent owner is a guy named Tony Fabrizio. He's a longtime Manafort associate. And the thing that makes this guy gave a $125,000 payment to lawyers for Manafort. And was paid for by a firm. But evidently this was in some of the stuff that Congress either put out or whatever. It was originally, gotten by Mueller, but Mueller hasn't even really pushed at it. It's just because evidently it's all somewhat legal. But the weird part is, I started to contrast what happened here to what the limits are for people to give contributions. And I ran through it real fast last night, but isn't it individually like $500 or $2,000 is all you can give? You can give one number for the campaign and a second time for the run for the regular office. The numbers people can give to politicians are not that high. And even corporations are the same way. I remember at the SIBO, we used to have people come and do breakfast meetings and all we could give them was $1,000. Now I think it's what, up to 2,000 stuff or 2,500 or something like that? It's not very much. And yet, somehow or another, you get to this point Wait a minute. How the hell is you get a $125,000 payment? Well, evidently, somewhere during the campaign, Trump decided he wasn't going to. He was pretty much tired, sick and tired of spending all his own money. So, despite him saying he wasn't going to take money from people, he did. And so this Manafort puts together one of these super PACs. And if you go into the definition, there's PACs, there's super PACs, there's all kinds of bizarre ways to do this. But so these guys are tracing this $125,000. Well, it turns out they call them dark money groups. Now, these guys, they're permitted to raise unlimited amounts of money from donors as long as they don't coordinate directly with campaigns. Now, how's that for a legal term?
Exactly.
What the hell does that mean? They don't coordinate.
I don't know, but you can contribute as a candidate $2,800 per election. And individuals may give $5,600 per candidate per cycle. I don't know what cycle means, but... And the National Party Committee also increased to $35,500 per year.
So you give $35,000 to the Democratic Republican Party,
right,
not to a candidate.
Right.
Okay. All right, so this particular one, there's a... In 2016, they decided to put this pact together. It was called Rebuilding America Now. Okay. To run the group, Manafort tapped an old friend, a Connecticut-based lobbyist, Lawrence, L-A-U-R-A, Lori Gay is the guy's name, Lori Gay, G-A-Y. He's a former official in Reagan's administration. Gay went on to work at Manafort's lobbying firm in the 80s and blah, blah, blah. Godfather of one of Manafort's daughters. Now get a little of this. Manafort's blessing and Gay at its helm, Rebuilding America raised more than $24 million between June and December 2016. More than any other pro-Trump super PAC during the entire election. That's pretty good for 6 months' work.
Yeah, apparently here, the National Party Committee Convention account, you can donate $106,500 per year.
So as an individual, you're pretty much, you know, you're a eunuch. You know, you're like snipped. You can't give anybody any money. Yet if you get into one of these depraved sort of things, you can pour as much money into people as you want.
Well,
as long as you don't coordinate, whatever that means.
You can give a federal candidate, you can only give, you know, roughly $2,800.
Yeah.
But if you're going to national parties, then you can get up into the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Okay.
Why do I hear numbers in the millions from people like the Cook brothers and Sheldon Adelson? And
they give them to a PAC, which is not a national thing. So a PAC is set up as an individual company, and those companies act as independents. So they can do...
Well, they don't coordinate. You mean like the Swift Boat ads, but those ran nationally. So how are they not national?
It's not a nationally affiliated with the campaign.
Oh.
If anybody believes that somebody is going to give $25 million to a guy or a lady, or I guess we could say neither, or the third choice these days, without coordinating with them, I got a bridge for you.
Well, that would have to be a tight relationship to begin with.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, if you're going to give me $25 million, you clearly know that I'm going to spend that money in your best interest.
Yeah, you would think. So what happens with the idea with the Swift Boat, Frank, is that that group decided to run those ads. And you know the ones were at the end of it where they'll say, Frank Fahey approved of these ads and reviewed these ads. That means they're attributable to you. If you're not saying that, then it's like a third party just, you know, having a... If you're running against Steph, you're showing her in a... I don't know what you're showing her in, but something nasty and... doing something weird to somebody, you know, setting off a bomb at somebody's house, that's not part of your campaign. But Matty Weber, the sneaky little group that's running, he can run that and it's okay. But then you don't say you approve it.
All of us are from Illinois and we know those caveats at the end of a commercial are lies.
Well, sure they are. What did the judge say? It's a prevarication?
Well, some of these candidates, I mean, in some cases, they do actually have people putting out ads out there that are not in their best interest, even though they're the people who are doing it think they are. So, you know, it's an interesting dynamic. There has to be, I'm with you. I mean, I recognize there can be no formal coordination, but as we've seen with a lot of the discussions that have been happening and money and all sorts of other things that have been going on lately, you don't need a formal communication to let people know what you want done.
Well, the
hence the concept of a bagman.
Right.
Well, because but here's the interesting part is now they raise all this money, okay? So they immediately hire this Fabrizio guy to be the ad agency, which means he gets what 20% or something. So he's getting his piece. So then when they decided to get the money to Trump, they gave Fabrizio or to Manafort. Sorry, they give this Fabrizio the money, and he ends up giving it to the other guy's attorneys. So now, if it was you or me, there'd be a gift tax, there'd be something on that. But this is perfectly legit, which, or I'll say legal. Well, I can't be saying legit for legal these days, but, so, I mean, but an individual person would be chased all over the place on this.
What do you mean? If you just gave me money?
Well, yes. if I gave you 100 grand, at least I'd have to pay a gift tax on it, right?
Right, exactly.
But there'd be something.
Right.
SP Futures down 2. That's not the number, though. Dow Futures down 158 because of Boeing. We're going to talk about that after the break. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure.
but I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as they do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. She's Stephanie Coney. He's Mr. Frank Fahey, a Mr. Frank Fahey, Mr. Matt Weber as well. Notice how you become a Mr. these days, man, instead of just Matt Weber. You know?
Has a nice ring to it.
Does have a nice ring to it. Like, is your dad around or something? What the hell? S&P futures up 4.25. NASDAQ futures up 22. Dow futures over down 150. 200 points of that plus of the down is Boeing. Because I got it down almost $40 now. It's 39.79. Trading 362. That's 382.95. So they've erased a lot of their gains in the last few weeks. I mean, having their new plane, of which there's like, I don't know how, there's like 500 of these things on order. So it's Boeing's future. There's no doubt. It's this plane. And now three countries have, essentially grounded them. I don't know, I bet some people were walking out the hair this morning saying, what the bleep, over. Or Midway for sure, because Midway has, 53 of these or something. I think I read last night. Steph, does that sound right?
Sounds about right.
Anyway, so that's not, this is not good for Boeing this morning. It's not good for the people that are dead either. So it's not like it's just Boeing's problem. DAX up 29.2%, FTSE up 40.5% because they have more Brexit problems. How do you not have a problem when the people vote to be out and all the politicians who are working the deal don't want to be out? I think you need to replace all those people if you really want to get out.
I always disagree on this topic.
I know. Well, you disagree whether they should have or shouldn't have. I'm saying once they did, whatever. Kekron, we'll talk about that a second. One in a second here. Kekron, I said up 11.2% over in Asia. We've got the Nikkei up 99. And these guys were all down last week. Shanghai was down like 4.5%, I believe, on Friday morning. Thursday or Friday. Today they're up almost 2%, 57.13. Back over 3,000. Hang Seng up 274, 1%. So we're actually fairly bullish everywhere except Boeing. We've got oil up at 32 cents, 56.39. Brent up 40 cents, 66.14. That spread is $9, and let's call it 80 cents. Natural gas down 7 cents, 287. RBOB up another penny, 181. Wow. I think I paid $2.59 to give the Suburban a drink this weekend. That's high enough. Gold down 440, 1294. Silver down 4 cents. Maddie, what do you got for us? Trevi, Weather Sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a couple of issues already this morning. Bishop Ford inbound just before 130th Street. There is a crash that's causing some delays. No issues on the Dan Ryan. We did have an earlier issue on the outbound side just before Roosevelt, but apparently that's cleared, so no resulting congestion from that. That's all good. 57 looks good, as does the Stevenson. Eisenhower, traffic starting to build, but no accidents to report. Kennedy's our slowest moving expressway right now, approaching 38 minutes from O'Hare into downtown, which is a bit long for this hour in the morning. Everything else looking okay out there. Off the expressways, we have an issue out near Carroll Stream, Western Suburbs, Lake Street at Arlington Drive, and then down in Joliet at Francis Road and Cedar, there is a crash. Weather today, it's going to be a relatively normal temperature day for this time of year. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 42, so that'll feel all right. Right now it's mostly clear and 28 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast today, a high of 73. Right now it's partly cloudy and 56. In sports, Bulls were blown out in Detroit 131-108 yesterday. Suns with an upset win at Golden State 115-111. Blackhawks and Coyotes were both off. Blackhawks look to stay alive in the playoff race. They play tonight at the United Center. College hoops, Illinois will have a team in the NCAA tournament, the surprise of everyone. Bradley, with an unlikely run through the Missouri Valley Conference, comes back from 18 points down to Northern Iowa and beats them 57-54 down in St. Louis yesterday to win the Missouri Valley Conference tournament. So they are in. Loyola is likely out. Loyola was the regular season champion, and they are likely out of the
tournament. They've already been invited to the NIT, allegedly.
That's right. Illinois was blown out at Penn State 72-56. Chief.
Irish out.
Correct.
The Hawks have got a little more oxygen after the win in Dallas the other night.
Yeah, I mean, they still very unlikely, but yeah, that definitely keeps them alive. That was a big time win, especially against a team that you just beat you. That was nice.
They're 7 points down with what, 15, 14 to go? Sounds better than 9.
Yeah, right now they're 7 points down, but they got to leapfrog three teams, including our Arizona Coyotes. And, yeah, it looks like they,
they're toast.
Yeah. They have, 14 games left.
Yeah, wow.
So to make up 7 points. It's possible, but it's unlikely.
Yeah, it's unlikely. Anyway, we've got, this Boeing thing is, I think this is pretty serious. I mean, it's hard to even go out where your heart goes out to these people. I mean, Six minutes up and down you went. I mean, I remember the DC-10 between the regulations and so forth with that thing. I don't know how Boeing with that crazy crash over by Ryan was it Ryanair?
Ethiopian.
No, the first one.
Oh,
Ryanair.
What was it?
Lion. Yeah. Lion in Indonesia.
Yeah. How? I mean, Boeing has run roughshod over the investigators because that to me sounded awful freaky. And I don't know, nothing happened, right? I mean,
well, those are the reports that I was reading before. So they did some investigation, and from what I've read, please someone correct me if there's additional information, it was a couple weeks ago, Boeing concluded that everything on the plane behaved correctly, that it was pilot error. But as I said previously, my understanding is that the pilots are required to behave completely differently and almost counterintuitive to the way they were trained for the rest of for majority of other types of planes. So I think that this is a combination of, you know, you can't train somebody to be completely counterintuitive, something you've trained them on for the whole life, and expect them to react in a high pressure situation well.
I would agree with that, and I just think that takeoffs are supposed to be pretty safe. I don't know if you got a problem with the plane at takeoff. I mean, for God's sake.
Well, on Lion Air, they're saying they didn't turn off the autopilot.
Right.
Okay.
But I'm not sure why that was a problem.
Well, I mean, I've never heard of. I'm not a pilot, but I didn't think the autopilot was on during takeoff. But maybe it is.
I don't know. With some of these new planes, it seems like they are.
Well, they land by autopilot now, right?
In a lot of cases.
It's
sounds like something Tom and I could do.
Yeah.
On our weekends.
Oh, good. Let's go flying. You guys can drive.
I'd walk off.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking.
it takes a while. Now, if I went through all the classes and everything, you'd come with me, Frank. You know I'd be careful.
I have a bunch
of friends. Yeah, I would.
I have a bunch of friends who fly, and I would absolutely love to take flying lessons and learn. In fact, actually, one of my friends is a stunt pilot.
Gee.
That's just kind of crazy. But he does have amazing photographs. He does some very credible things.
We had a client who had a MiG-17 that he used to fly at air shows.
Interesting.
But the problem was he wasn't a very big guy either, but it was a Chinese MiG. Now, the problem there is because Chinese dudes aren't necessarily all that big, on average, the ejector seat, if he were ever trying to eject, his shoulders would not have made it out.
Mm.
So
it's another good reason not to crash.
It's a good reason not to crash. Yeah, somewhat interesting. But yeah, I was I got caught reading last night, like you, Steph. I got caught buried in the idea of these campaign contribution things. I mean, this is incredibly complicated. And I the more I read about the Mueller investigation and all this stuff, and you watch this stuff, and I guess I get the question is, and I don't know, Frank, am I just getting old? I'm getting very insulted by the people that I'm essentially paying their paychecks, continuing to call me and everybody I know stupid. Now, the Democrats just passed a huge, what is it, like equity, out of the House,
mm-hmm.
something that had to do with ethics and campaigns and things like that. Now, they know damn well that they don't want it to pass, right? Because they don't have any more ethics than the Republicans. So, I mean, they want to force McConnell to say it's dead and arrival in the Senate. So the news media, which is not, I mean, they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, I guess, because it comes down to Senate refuses to even bring up for a vote ethics legislation. Okay, so that's really why they're doing it. Aren't they supposed to be there for doing something like better? Because I'm sure if the Senate passed it and sent it to the House wouldn't pass it, because neither side wants any ethics. I mean, who are we kidding here? I just, you know.
Everybody has a guy, including senators and members of the House of Representatives, and their job is not to take care of us. It's to take care of the guy they know.
Yep.
So question, though. I mean, I think we, in this day and age, with news being 24 hours a day and cameras being on all the time, we have a lot more insight into the things that happen there. I mean, this isn't a new concept. This isn't something like humans haven't been doing for hundreds of years. So, I mean, I completely agree with your perspective. It's incredibly infuriating and frustrating. But is it just that we're seeing more of it now, or is it just that it's happening more?
I think we're seeing more of it, but I also think that people are digging and putting in the headlines and things. But it's weird to me, and I don't know. I grew up on the South Side, and even the mob had certain scruples.
Right.
You would think that the same dirty tricks politicians would pull to steal money out of the place when there was money to steal, that even they would have somewhat of a conscience when the place is broke. And yet they don't seem to. I mean, it's not like people have the morals where they won't cheat the Illinois pension system, you know, by getting another day on. And what was the one we talked about last week, where if you get an $850 bonus 1 week, it was $20,000 a year more to your pension?
Yeah.
I mean, you would think that you would, when you know the thing's in trouble, you like lay off for like at least a little while, but they don't. I mean, everybody's looking at Congress as being incredibly dysfunctional. Every election, no matter who you are, Democrat, Republican, if you run saying Congress is basically a bunch of turds out there and they don't do anything right and you need all new blood or you need this, that, and the other thing, you win. I mean, I was so stunned by the four guys, the young Democrats, two guys, two ladies, and the one guy said, she said, what was your campaign like, Margaret Brennan? He goes, the same. It was the same campaign as Trump's. You run against the Congress that's there, because everybody knows it's dysfunctional.
Well, I mean, Congress was not set up to actually... They were set up to debate, and to debate for a long while on things in order to make things a little more mainstream or hash out a lot of the differences on both sides. I think the problem is currently, you know, you can't be seen talking to the other side. So how are you ever supposed to negotiate, which is the whole point of having the two houses and slowing legislation down and causing, you know, there to be multiple debates on the same topic. So, you know, my sister pointed this out to me one time. Congress is not meant to do things quickly. In fact, the whole point of them is to do things slowly so that decisions get made in an organized fashion. Now, that being said, I still agree with you that even if they are supposed to do things relatively slowly, so there's deep analysis on things, that there are a lot of hidden agendas, and they seem to be more and more pronounced. Either that or just more and more obvious.
Well, I'm not trying to make people what they're not, but I won't say she'll go nameless because she's the one who told me about it. She's now, where's Dr. J's wife? She's in Chancery Court now or something, with whatever the highest one. I mean, Bridges, terrific lady, a real bright. Well, she was in divorce court for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say there can't be two people that probably hate each other more than husband and wife going through divorce in a lot of these cases.
It is just the most miserable place to be.
It's a bad spot. But she said that, you know, not them, it wasn't her opinion, it wasn't like she was, she goes, what you find, that I was kind of noticing somewhat of a pattern, and that somebody wrote up some stuff and somebody handed me this, you know, study. It said no matter who you are, at whatever level of divorce you have, whether you're the Wrigleys or something, you got millions, or whether you don't have that much, you basically piss away 40 to 45% of all your net worth before you sit there and say, even though I hate the guy or I hate the lady, we better discuss this or we got nothing. There's a number at which people get to that no matter how much, now granted there's people that go further than that and people that figured out earlier. She says, but by and large, it got to be like 40%. Now, everybody looks at Congress right now and you see, I mean, you know, you get guys like Carl and the people who are on this show, who I think are as good a group of people. We're not here. We're obviously not making a bunch of money doing this. The point is, we're trying to educate
someone's
people.
Someone's making money doing
yeah,
this?
Yeah, so yeah, where is it? Maddie, maybe. We're trying to educate people on kind of what's going on and give them some sort of a clue as to what people are telling you that's kind of wrong and so forth. We're not here to be right or left or anything like that. But I'm stunned that there doesn't seem to be any amount of money, any amount of deficit, any amount of anything that causes these people to say, hey, look it. Even though we hate each other and we're tweeting out against each other all day long, we need to do something about healthcare. We need to do something about our debt. We need to do something about every one of these military contracts being four times as much as another. I mean, this thing with the state of Illinois is flat ass broke. The city's broke. The government's broke. And this goofball, whoever he is, I'd fire him tomorrow without even knowing him, that's running the, burn interchange project. They're another 3 years and another $200 million. What are we doing? I mean, you would think there'd be some pressure here, and yet there isn't. Because do bureaucrats, the people getting a paycheck, no matter what, or think they are? Is there no possible way you can put pressure on them? What's the story? Why? I mean, the state of Illinois is in at least as bad a shape as any couple in the state getting divorced, and they eventually will talk to each other. I mean, right? So, I mean,
yeah.
Even though you don't like the conversation, you might hold your nose, whatever. But you'll figure out a way. Nobody pisses through 100% of their money. I mean, I'm sure there probably have been a couple of couples that did, but everybody at some point there's a wake up call, and I have yet to see it here politically. I mean, how much lower do we got to go?
It's not their money.
Well, okay. How do we make it more like it's their money?
You know, it's a really great question. I don't have an answer.
I mean, how much? I mean, you look at Pritzker. You look at now whoever is going to be mayor, Preckwinkle. I think it'd be worse than the other one. They've got this idea, Steph, that and Frank, that everybody out there but them, everybody in the private sector, everybody they see driving a nice car, quote, has money that they're willing or should be giving to somebody else. And you know, everybody knows. I'm, you know, for a long time, I was a big bleeding heart Democrat, and I'm still one of the most generous guys. If people are in trouble, I want to help them, and I don't mind contributing. But the point is, everybody out there who has something, you can't just look at them, point a finger at them and say, that guy or person, that lady has too much money, they should give some to me and let me do what I want with it. I mean, that's an amazing view of the world.
Yeah, it's a very selfish view.
But
you know, the progressives seem to be on this track too, and you know, I'm a middle of the road kind of person, which I keep hearing doesn't help us in the radio industry,
no,
but
no.
Nevertheless, I just, some of the policies or the things that they're shooting out there, I just don't understand. And I don't see how that helps our country. Yes, we need to do a bunch of reform on healthcare, but Medicaid for all, Medicaid doesn't work necessarily well either.
No.
So I just don't understand kind of what path we're trying to walk down.
Yeah, well, I think we have people that are spouting these views. And Maddie's going to hate it when I say this because, they obviously don't know how to add.
I think they don't care to add.
Well, but at some point you have to. I mean, I don't.
Isn't a bigger problem they don't know how to subtract?
There you
take something away.
Well, that's maybe that's it. But I mean the whole idea. I mean, just what's her name? AOC. The one. Well, the reason why everybody talks about her is because she never shuts up. I mean, she's gonna give you a soundbite every day. So for whatever reason, she's put herself as the sound.
May I ask a question? Yeah. Why do we only say that about women?
Exactly.
To talk all the time.
Why
is that a criticism of women? We don't hear people saying it about Jim Jordan or Getz or Mark Meadows.
Yeah.
We don't hear that they're bigots either.
I'm gonna be an old curmudgeon here, and I'm gonna say, you know what? I don't see them getting the press, Frank.
But they've gotten the press in the past.
What I'm saying, my point is that, and this is my own laziness, so I'm doing a mea culpa here. If you get in, I was helping some people out this weekend, and then I had to go to a wake the other night. I went away on the south side, so I was in the car a long time, and I'm listening to news radio. You know, I didn't hear any of those other guys. I heard Elizabeth Warren. I heard AOC. Everybody's trying to tax this person, that person. They're getting the press. Now, Frank's probably right. There's probably some guy somewhere who's just as ignorant. You know, I'm not anti. I'm just saying this is what I'm hearing. For some reason, the press is picking them up. Okay. Now, that's why I'm saying it, Frank. I mean, it's not like I'm against them personally. I'm not a fan of Elizabeth Warren at all. But I hear her all the time. I mean, I don't hear any of these other people. The two names you just mentioned, I know who they are. I haven't heard of them.
But that's part of a strategy on the part of the people who are against Elizabeth Warren and AOC. They make sure that we hear every utterance, and they make a deal of it.
Well,
it's like on Tlaib and being anti-Semitic.
Okay,
that didn't drop. Was that Democrats who were doing it?
All right, Frank. Well, I know you're a little. I know you're still.
I'm passionate.
I know you're still passionate, but even you can't go with that one. When Elizabeth Warren or AOC says something, they want everybody to hear. If you say something and I put it on national radio, I shouldn't be doing you harm. I should be helping you. If you said something,
so we could say that if women dress a certain way, they want something to happen. It's the same thing, Tom. To me.
I'm going to say maybe they do.
I'm twisting your words. I'll admit that. But
my point is, you can't blame News Radio 78 for putting an Elizabeth Warren quote out there that she obviously wants out there. It's not like they twisted it.
No, but it's interesting when you've got an array of, what do we have, 22 candidates or probably more than that, that the only two people you do hear from.
Why was the only guy when you went to the debates, the Republican debates, and they gave Trump the middle slot, and everybody else a chance to talk? Somehow or another, the person who becomes newsworthy gets there. But the people who get newsworthy want to be newsworthy. It wasn't like Trump didn't want to be the big mouth in the middle. He did. Right?
Why don't we hear that Trump talks too much constantly? We hear that about AOC daily.
Because she's one of a bunch of freshman things, and then people get the... I get the feeling, because I watch all these other young Democrats or Republicans, I get the feeling that they might be just as smart and just as willing to work as she is, and yet somehow or another... Well, Newt Gingrich was the one who did that, started it, Frank. He would sit there on CNBC and he would give speeches in the Congress when he was like the only guy there because he wanted to be quoted.
Yeah, it was on the radio.
But why are we not hearing Mayor Pete all the time instead of AOC?
I mean, she is making it... I hope she... I mean, I feel like I'm denouncing the young lady. I'm not. What I'm saying, I hope she makes it to her. She never saw a microphone she didn't like. Okay. And I mean, this is a true statement. And she right now, it's almost like she's campaigning for president. Does she even show up for committee assignments, or is that beneath her? I hope she does. I don't know,
but you know what? They're taking a play out of Trump. You know, Trump, it takes every opportunity to be on TV, and they are doing the same thing.
Well, did Obama ever act like a freshman senator?
He actually did go to meetings, but probably not. I mean, he sort of was the golden child when he moved into that role.
I'm saying this for everybody. Tammy Duckworth, she's a veteran. Obviously, she lost. I mean, she paid a huge price for being a veteran. I think the lady's terrific. When she was the veterans head of veterans thing here in Illinois, I didn't see any improvement there. Was it just a stepping stone, or did she actually give a rat's behind when she was there? I don't know, but I mean, are people just walking over these jobs to get to the next one?
I mean, I think as a junior person in Congress, you don't have a lot of power. I think you need to be there a while. I think it's part of the the way the establishment's set up.
I
think Elizabeth Warren and AOC, I'm waiting for them to burn out because everyone gets tired of listening to whoever it is, right, that's out front. And I think they got a long way to go. So I'd be surprised if we see as much from them in 6-10 months as we do today.
Well, here's my concern is I'm sitting here talking to three intelligent people. I'll even put Maddie in that group, which he is. And you and I and Frank know that you can't just point at, we'll use you as an example, Steph. Nice house, couple of nice cars, hubby's an attorney. You look at him and now I know that people in every walk of life, just because your house costs more and your car costs more, it doesn't mean that you all of a sudden have all this, quote, cash laying around. It means that instead of making $100,000 a year, you make $200,000, so you got a nicer house, nicer car, your payments are just bigger. The idea that person is, quote, rich and has, you know, $20,000 in there that he's, you know, that he's getting hookers with, that he might as well give to the government, is just not true. That person is on just as much the edge of their wealth as the person making $50,000 or $70,000, because guess what? In Chicago, they make sure of that. Your taxes will go up, your parking feeders will go up, whatever it is, it's going to go up. Now, I just heard yesterday, I don't know if you heard this, Frank, that your cost of leasing a car from 3 years ago is going to be up like 40% from the last lease. Because of a combination that the cars coming off lease are not selling for what people thought they were, so they're going to have lower prices, residual prices on the next lease. I mean, the price increases are all over the place. So what I'm saying is for either one of those ladies, they just happen to be ladies, they could be guys too, for them to think that just because somebody makes $300,000 a year that he all of a sudden has $100,000 extra to give to them is somewhere between naive and stupid.
Yeah, but this was the problem that we had in the last presidential election, right? And I hate to say it, you know, I'm not a Bernie fan, and I'm not a Bernie fan for this exact reason. You know, all I hear is that we're going to take money from one place and put it in another. Now, that is tried and true. There's aspects of that are very important to the economy. You definitely need, I mean, we talk about the middle class here quite a bit. We talk about, you know, some redistribution of wealth. There's definitely some places where that needs to happen. But what all I hear is, give me, because I want more. And that's the part that just is frustrating.
Consider this for a second. We only got a minute here. What is the difference between the Republicans, give me less taxes, and let the shit fall where it goes, or the Democrats, give me more for my people, and let the crap goes where it goes? It's the exact same thing. It's just different people getting it.
This was my argument last week.
Right? I mean, isn't it true?
No, I like Frank's opinion.
Frank, are you still with us?
I mean, I'm still with you. So what are the more and more that they're asking for? And I'm dead serious. Want things.
Yeah, they somehow have this view that people in our markets make too much money. They want to put a tax on. Any place there isn't a tax.
Our market's dead.
Yeah, okay, it's dead.
Technology is taking us there, and it's going to still strip jobs away. Yeah,
I think. I do too, but my point is, whatever they don't know anything about, let's tax that area. And turn around, what are we going to do with that money? We're going to give it to, quote, education or something. But even though everybody we know has got their finger in the pie in education, by the way, the teachers vote for us, and so we're going to give them a raise and all this other kind of stuff. We're going to take money away from the general pot and give it to people that support us. Okay, that's the Democratic side.
Where's the new budget, which has just been announced?
Right,
where's
saying the Republican side, they're going to give all their supporters a cut. And
wall.
Well, right. Well, $8 billion. You know.
Would you rather see $8 billion go to education or $8 billion go to a wall?
I would rather $8 billion go to education, but so what? So Notre Dame goes from 62,000 to 65.
But Notre Dame's private. That's a for-profit, you know.
Well, but
CSC stands for cash, strictly cash.
My point is that we've reached the point here that after there's a sense, Frank, that I'm always searching for. There's a sense that has when after the war, when you get these people over there, 24, 25 years old, or 23, that fought for 5 years or 4 years, and you send them to Notre Dame or Illinois or DePaul or someplace for 200 hours a year or 400 hours a year, whatever it is, and all of a sudden these people that know how to interact with other people, those kind of, it's a spectacular investment on the part of government. Putting up the Golden Gate Bridge is a spectacular investment. Paying $70,000 to send somebody on a GI Bill to Notre Dame to learn sociology is not an investment. It's way too expensive. It's a horrible
investment.
It might
be way too expensive to spend $70,000 a year on a cop that worked for 20 years.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I'm that too.
I mean, we have plenty of examples of where money's being pissed away.
And we also have pretty good examples of federal investments that have gotten home in spades to them.
But I guess the point really comes back to is rather than trying to figure out where we take money from and where we put it to, can't we look at the programs that we already have where there's a lot of money and a lot of money not being spent necessarily efficiently and really look to start economizing? I mean, this is kind of my pet peeve, right? I mean, we have had this country for roughly 200 years and we've keep putting laws on. Who is starting to take some laws off so that we simplify our overall legal situation and we simplify our overall programs? I mean, I recognize that may not necessarily be popular because you can't just say, hey, but hey, I'm adding this feature or I'm adding that feature, but it's just like a software platform. At some point, it gets to be too clogged and you got to go back and you got to look at the fundamentals and you got to straighten it out and bring it up back up from the base, right? And I just don't see people willing to make that discussion or willing to have those discussions.
We have a no doubt on this group that you're with, you're going to get tremendous agreement on that. But as a campaign, that's about as sexy as me.
Oh, come on.
I mean, it's as Dr. J says about shows like ours, nobody will pay for information, they're only going to pay for affirmation.
They just did a tax cut. They are advertising is that got cut out loopholes. Cut out loopholes is a great
there's
way
more,
of
there's it. More as many now as there were before.
I recognize that, but I'm just saying if you market
change
it,
who they benefit.
Yep.
Right. I'm just saying if you change the marketing on that, you know.
All I'm saying, Steph, is I think you're a lot brighter, but I'm going to say that AOC is going to get on the quote trail a lot more often than you will with your common sense stuff.
Yeah, well, that's why she's running and I'm not.
You might run. How do we know you won't be senator from Illinois 8 years from now?
I got a little ways to go.
Well, I don't know. All you got to do is have in this day and age.
I'd vote for you, Steph.
I'd vote for you.
Thank you.
I'll write you in, Frank. Take care, buddy. I might need you later in a week if this market keeps jumping around like this.
Okay.
S&P futures down, up 3. NASDAQ futures up 19. The big number is Boeing now over $40. Wow. There's three countries have grounded those planes. We'll be right back. Shoot up, Mr. Carl Denninger.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. It's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello, North Bay, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber, Stephanie Koenig. We also have Mr. Carl Denninger. Carl, I'm sorry I'm late. I must have been in the middle of a rant when Maddie said wrap it up, and I didn't wrap it up. Imagine that. SP Futures up 275. NASDAQ Futures down, up 18. The big move today, though, is Boeing down 40 bucks. So it's got the Dow Futures down 150. I have UTEX down as well, $2. Virtually everything else in the Dow is up pre-market. So I'm going to guess, Carl, that UTEX, the 737 MAX has got to have Pratt & Whitney engines. Is that true? Is that why UTEX is down, or just a general engine manufacturer? Do they have a Pratt & Whitney or GE? I'm trying to think. Carl, you with us? He is not.
He should be. Let me get him back.
All right. Why did I get the feeling? Why did I think they had GE engines? I thought
they did too. Let's look it up.
We want to talk to Carl about the employment numbers last Friday. We haven't mentioned those yet. They came in at 20,000. Now, why, Steph, is everybody wailing and gnashing of teeth? Last month they were supposed to be 160 and they came in at 304. This month they're supposed to be 160 and they come in at 20. If you average the two together, they're right where they're supposed to be. Why is it? You know, there's a timing issue around the holidays, around the end of the year, where there's always big adjustments, and those are the months you'd expect stuff like that. Why is that that big of a news story, you think?
I'm guessing it has a lot to do with the fact that the media is focusing on economic policy and overall deficit in the last couple of days.
Carl, you with us, bud?
Yeah, I am.
Hey, I'm sorry. I kept talking right through a break. I blame
it. Yeah, no, it's fine. I was just like, oh, wait a minute, phone hasn't rung yet.
I blame it on my producer, even though it wasn't his fault. Although when you're at, I'm supposed to get a hard break. Just cut me off. Cut.
That's right.
Hey, we're looking at your page here. First of all, I always have to ask you something more current. Would you fly a 737 MAX this morning?
No, and frankly, I think there's a bigger discussion that needs to be had here. Which is that, because this same thing applies to automobiles as does airplanes. While the jury is certainly not in on this, this is now two crashes that appear from outward looks to have been caused by the same thing, which is safety systems that did the exact opposite of, well, at least had the opposite outcome that they were intended to have. Whether or not that's actually what's happened here is open to some dispute at this point, but it'll eventually be figured out. The problem is that we have tried to make these things harder to crash by having a computer say, well, you know, the airplane's about to stall, which, by the way, isn't the way your car stalls. It's aerodynamic stall, and therefore lose lift and fall and hit the ground. And so to prevent that from happening, we're going to make the stick go forward, which decreases the angle of attack and reduces the, you know, the chance of that happening. The problem is, if the instrumentation is wrong, then it dives the plane into the dirt. Okay?
Yep.
And so, there's a problem, you know, if that's what's going on here, and it, like I said, it's not, you know, it isn't determined yet whether or not that's the case. Whatever happened to having a skilled person in the seat
exactly. That
actually flies the aircraft?
And since when did we stop relying on people? I know we're all fallible, but...
Well, that's what I'm saying, is yeah. when did we take the pilot out of the aircraft, okay? Because, you know, this is one of those problems that comes up. It's the same sort of thing with Tesla's ramming fire trucks, okay? The idea that the computer is safer... You can try to make that statistical argument all you want. That assumes that every decision the machine makes is backed by perfect data. That is a bad assumption.
It also assumes that the machine can handle every situation that it encounters. And, you know, being a human, we all know we encounter hundreds of thousands of situations that you couldn't have anticipated. So I just don't understand how we make that leap, but I agree with you.
Well, the idea
well,
that
well, essentially, what we're trying to do is we're in this quest for perfection.
Yep.
We're delegating decision making to robots.
Well, I don't have any problem with something that big. If all of a sudden something happened and you entered some kind of a stall for the thing not to have a warning, just in case. I mean, when you're talking about something that big, I don't necessarily think it's a bad idea to have some mechanical help. But the idea that airlines or any kind of plane is, you know, goes nose first into the ground without being shot 6 minutes after takeoff. I mean, we've seen planes crash, you know, our whole lifetime, Carl and Steph, but nothing like this. I mean, you'll see turbulence, you'll see something, you'll be mechanical failure, you'll see a bomb on it. The idea that the thing takes off and noses into the ground. I mean, the DC-10 where the thing came off the wing and that kind of thing. I mean, you stuff happens. But the idea of a brand new plane going nose first into the ground a month after it's delivered or 2 months, 6 minutes after takeoff, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. Have you?
Well, again, it's you know, this is predicated on the analysis that, you know, is of course right now very much imperfect information. I'm guessing, but it's an educated guess based on this being the second incident. And that educated guess is that the computer believed that the plane was experiencing an aerodynamic stall, and the solution to that is reduce the angle of attack. Problem is, if you're, you know, 400 feet off the ground when you do that, and you don't have 400 feet, well,
yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, the problem is, if the diagnosis is wrong, then the corrective action is wrong, too. If that happens at 15,000 feet, doesn't matter so much because you got plenty of room between you and the dirt. But if it happens at, you know, 300 or 400 feet, yuck! All right. I just think that we're putting too much faith in the wrong place. And you can train people on procedures. You know, if this starts, then turn the stupid computer off and fly the aircraft. But maybe then again, you can say, well. Same thing with Tesla. You know, if the autopilot malfunctions, turn the stupid thing off and drive the car. The problem is people don't, and you run into situations where the Tesla rams the back of the fire engine.
Well, you get to the point, Carl, and again, we don't want to talk too much more. We talk about these numbers because they're bizarre, but you get to the point where the regulator gets run over by the firm. And Boeing now has more power than anybody. I mean, even the president couldn't spank them because they were charging too much for Air Force One. I mean, they've become a monopoly, and certainly in civil aviation, and pretty much a monopoly. It's easily the most dominant one of a cartel. But when I was a Ute, and I remember the 767 coming out, which was a gorgeous plane. And yet, if you weren't four engine or 300, if you didn't have that kind of backup, it took you what? How many years flying distance over land before you were cleared to fly over water? Because guess what? There's no. If you're flying from New York to L.A. and something goes wrong with the plane, you can land in Chicago. Well, there's no Chicago in the middle of the Atlantic. So it took a long time to where you had to prove this plane out. How many gazillion hours and miles before they said, okay, you can fly the 767 from New York to London? And now this 737 MAX, the thing is 6 months old. And they're flying from here to Iceland. They're flying, and because all of a sudden they did that all by computer. 787, same way. They were flying overseas like the first day because they tested everything that could happen by computer. How the hell, Carl, does anybody with an ounce of gray matter think that you can test something mechanical by computer, simulate it, and have it be the same as flying it for a year and see what happens?
Well, you can't. I mean, this is, you know, it's amazing how small the problem is that can cause something like this. It's, you know, just as an example, if you have a block Pytot tube, which is the, you know, the little tube in the front that gives the, tells you how fast you're going, right? So it takes air, it gets rammed in there, and it measures it. There's a cover that goes on that thing when the plane's on the ground because you don't want to get dirt and stuff in there. Don't take that cover off and watch what happens to your instruments. Okay.
I never realized what that did.
There's heat on those things. There's a heater built into them because they can ice up in the wintertime. But what happens if something goes wrong with that sensor? And the evidence that the computer gets is wrong. Well, the guy that's driving the plane, if he's actually flying it, it doesn't feel right based upon what he's, you know, what he's seeing on his panel, if that thing's screwed up. But the computer doesn't have a butt deal with. It just has the instrumentation, and that's all it's got.
I like to equate this to electronic traders when they get bad information or bad ticks or something.
Yeah.
They go haywire, you know, and it's the same situation. The thing is that's usually just with this financial, not with lives.
Yeah, those people lose money. These people lose people.
Exactly.
Well, that's the thing. Carl Harvey, we got to switch. Paul Harvey, page two. I'm looking at the page that you signed me on. A1 labor force statistics, the current population survey. And our friend Carl says, you know, at the end of the year, the numbers kind of go haywire. You know what? Have they ever gone haywire like this? We actually had, I'm looking at the numbers from October through February. Of course, Friday, everybody was wringing their hands about the 20,000 people hired versus the 170 we're supposed to have. Of course, last month, we had 300 and some when we were supposed to have 170, and that was spectacular. But if you average it 2 out, we're about the same spot. But neither one of those numbers is anywhere close to this household survey, which you've taught me on to. Where the hell did the 800,000 people in the population go from December to January? Did we lose them to where? Puerto Rico?
No. That's the problem. Is what happens is you get the adjustment month, okay, and you went from the working age population in December 2018-12 to 258,888. Okay, that's the number that was in there. In January, they do the adjustment to fix the accumulated error, and it's 258,239. Well, wait a minute. You're telling me we murdered 650,000 people?
Well, I
don't think so.
Well, we're bumping along, as you mentioned, and now it confirms here. Look at all the other months. We essentially got roughly 180,000, 200,000 more people per month that are in the population.
Right.
And all of a sudden now, we dropped 6 in 1 month. Does that mean all those other months should have been 100?
Yes.
Okay.
It means they were off. And okay. But that happens every year. There's only one adjustment month. It's January. And the rest of the months of the year, it's a guess. And they're wrong. And they get adjusted every year. But let me point out something here. All right, that establishment survey number was of course horrible. However, look at the household survey, and in this month, February, this last month, according to household survey, the job gain was plus 1.203 million, that is, 1,203. Now, that's not abnormal. Last year, it was plus 474.
Whoa, where are you getting at? I've got...
At, at, Yeah, and the year before that, it was plus 1067. So, I mean, this is why I don't use the establishment numbers, and I don't use the seasonal adjustments, because they are always a crock.
But if you use these numbers here, now where are you getting yours? You got a secret thing. I'm looking at the one that you told me to look at, and then I got 156,945 employed in December. In January, when we supposedly had this 300,000 up number, it actually went down 250,000. And the last month, it went back up the same 250. So it's exactly the opposite of the establishment number. So what number are you getting? It's not this 156,945 in December. Where are you at?
Where are you at? The place you want to look is, let me get you the exact page here. Off household data, it's on page 11 of the PDF file. And it moves a little bit, a page here and there. But I use the not seasonally adjusted column. There's only 3 months in that column. The rest is the seasonally adjusted ones. There's last year from the same month. There's the previous month and the current month. So the civilian labor force, the civilian non-institutional population, which is everybody 16 years of age and older, is 258,392. For this month, okay, and the employed number is 156,167.
So this one's got 156,949.
Where are you getting that one? That's you're in the seasonally adjusted number. Don't use those.
Okay, I mean,
those are the bad
adjusted
ones.
All right, okay, all right, fair enough.
Right, so that's where that's the problem. Is that if you use the seasonally adjusted numbers, essentially what you're doing is you're trusting the BLS to accurately fix their errors, and this is an organization that in January disclosed that they were off by 600,000 people. So why would you believe that the rest of their seasonal adjustments are any good? Okay, I mean,
right. So we're really looking at the relative changes between them on a monthly basis, because we're assuming they're inconsistently wrong, the same all the time.
Yeah, well, the problem, and the problem is, errors. If you believe that something is an error, if that's what it's represented to you as, errors are supposed to be normally distributed.
Right.
Okay. These errors are never normally distributed. They're not errors.
Ah. Okay.
That's the way I see it. But that's the first thing you learn in statistics, is that if you are looking at something and there's supposed to be an error within this that happens, if it's actually a mistake, then the errors will be normally distributed. There will be an equal number of them in the positive and negative sides, and they will follow essentially a statistically valid bell curve. Right? That's what they'll look like. Right. And if they don't look like that, somebody's playing games.
Right.
It's not a mistake.
They're automatically kind of, in essence, cancel each other out.
Well, 800,000 people is a massive adjustment.
It is, but it happens every year.
No, I'm talking about the amount of people working.
Look, it happens every year. Last year, We went in 2017, it was 256,109 in December, and the next month, all of a sudden, 671,000 people showed up that weren't there before.
Well, what is your read currently? I mean, these numbers are, well, obviously, we love them. I don't know if the rest of the world does, but what everybody seems to think, when I say everybody, I'm leading the witness a little bit. There appears to be some slowdown the last couple of months, last 6 weeks for sure, that everybody's kind of putting their finger on. Is there one, Carl? And if there is, what caused it? I don't see anything that we've done differently that I disagree with or agree with the last 2 months versus the last 6 months. Yet it does seem to me, I mean, our producer, Mr. Weber, eloquently talked last Friday regarding how many layoffs there have been in the Chicago area that he knows about. Every combination of firm, it just seems like they're starting to increase. Why are we all of a sudden slowing? I mean, because
the monetary heroin got cut off. It takes about 12 to 18 months before it shows, you know, monetary policy changes show up in the actual economy. I mean, that's just the way it's always been. It's never instantaneous. There's a lag time on it. There always has been, there always will be, and that's just because people make plans and then it takes time for them to change them, right? And that's, you know, I mean, if you got a building halfway up, you're going to finish it, right? I mean, that's just kind of the way it works. So as a result, this is what we've seen from the bottom was monetary and fiscal fraud on mass scale, and it went on for 10 years. It became what everybody expected. The problem with that is just like any other kind of drug, there's a coffin corner issue when you have an addictive substance. You've got it with heroin, you've got it with monetary policy as well. The Fed knows this. The federal government doesn't care, including Donald Trump, although he's hardly the only offender, good Lord. I mean, every president back since Slick Willie, when they started this nonsense with the way that they do their budgeting and their CBO stuff, none of them give a rat's you-know-what about anything having to do with fiscal deficits. And you have the cost-push side of inflation. They say we have none, right? But you've had every Fed chair show up and proclaim intent to violate the law.
Yeah.
Before Congress, twice a year, in Humphrey Hawkins, they don't get let out in irons, they get cheered, CNBC cheers, Larry Kudlow cheers, you know, it's all wonderful. You know, 2% inflation, well, that's not what the law says. The law says stable prices, and while you can control how much of that you allow to go on with monetary shenanigans through the Federal Reserve and through Congress, remember that every piece of loose monetary policy, it means nothing without somebody increasing their debt ratios and spending that additionally emitted currency. Who's been doing it? The federal government's been doing it. $10 trillion in the last 10 years. And oh, by the way, you cannot control where in the economy, in prices, that shows up. You can control how much of it is there, but you cannot control where it goes. And where it is gone is education, healthcare, and a whole bunch of other places. You know, I just wrote about this. I said, you know, hey, who's telling me there's no inflation? Look at the average ticket price on new car sales from 10 years ago and today.
Well, so I'll tell you two things. What, if you were to look back, I have a piece of paper I should have sent to you. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the price of pickup trucks has not increased in 10 years. They're all, and even this year, if you look at the price of new small trucks, they're going to say it's zero, but in fact it's $850. And they will tell you because of like a backup camera or something else, it's all quality. Increase.
Right, well, that's what they all say. But yeah. You know what? Here's the problem. And this is one of the points I made back in Leverage in 2011. All right? They run the same nonsense with televisions. All right?
Right.
So you have a much better TV, therefore, you know, sharper picture, uses less energy, blah, blah, blah. What if I want to buy the old one? They don't make them anymore.
Well, you know, what's kind of odd, Carolyn, we'll talk next time around, but there's no differentiation in the numbers between, other than the percentage of the basket, which should make a big difference, because the idea that a TV you buy once every 10 years, your prescription drugs you're buying once a month. I mean, but I have a question for you, just because then we got a dash. We only got like a minute, but I'm of the school, being a University of Chicago guy, that there is no such thing as fiscal policy. There only is to the extent that if you actually went out, if Carl was the president and you went out and borrowed $1 billion from the population and then you spent over $1 billion, okay, and actually did it that way, that it would just be pure fiscal policy. You traded federal government spending for population spending. But that's not what happens. Right now, the money supply increases to cover the billion, and actually they're the ones that are buying the paper. I don't think in today's world there is such a thing as fiscal policy.
I would say there is, but it's driven by Congress. Look, the day that the people sitting in the House and the Senate, when they have Powell now, and you know, of course, Bernanke and Yellen before him, up in their semi-annual testimony, the day that they tell him, "You cut this out, you stop violating the law, you're going to prison," is the day that we actually, I mean, you know, everybody wants to blame the Fed, okay? Excuse me, the Fed exists because Congress passed a law. The Fed continues to violate that law, and Congress does nothing about it. Whose fault is this?
Well, I didn't make my argument very, I'll make it better next time you come on, because I think you'll agree with me. If I actually explain it properly, I think you agree. In other words, if the Fed isn't party to it and don't create the billion, all you're trading is federal government spending for individual spending, and that's not what we're doing.
Right. Exactly.
Carol, thank you very much, buddy. Sorry for being a few minutes late. I'm Tom House. He's Mr. Stephanie Koenig. He's Mr. Matt Weber. We'll come back with Mr. David Adelman. Again, S&P futures up 3. NASDAQ futures up 21. Dow down 150 because Boeing is now down $45. It's getting more serious with Boeing. We'll be right back. Stocks from Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ashley, Stephanie Koenig. He's Mr. Matt Weber. So David Adelman. U.S. retail sales rose 0.2% in January, with a 0.1% drop expected. Remember, we had the bad number in December, so we're seeing a little bounce back here. So it's kind of like the employment numbers, where we're getting caught in our months here, which maybe, you know what, Steph, this might be, well, some of this might be because of the government shutdown, is that these numbers, the cutoff dates maybe weren't so cut off, shall we say. Anyway, S&P futures up 450. NASDAQ futures up 25. Dow's down like 190, though, due to Boeing now down 46.7. This is the lowest I've seen at 46.94. 47.21. This thing's dropping like a stone. The only other stock in the Dow that is down this morning is pre-market is UTX, which was down $2, but now it's only down 50 cents. And they obviously make jet engines. I don't know if they make them for the 737. We'll try and find that out. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 99.5%. Shanghai up 57. It's a big move. That's almost 2%. Over 3,003.026. Hang Seng up 274. 28,503. Again, we're continuing to kind of live off the Goldman Sachs thing with China is going to be done pretty soon type of thing. I don't know about that. DAX, well, I already did DAX. I already did Asia. I'm doing oil. I'm going squirrely here because I keep watching this Boeing number move around. Oil up 32 cents, 0.5%. Brent up 40 cents, 0.6%. Its spread is now $9.80. Natural gas down 8 cents, 2.78. RBOB up another 2 cents, 1.82. So when you start going to the pump and you're putting it in, you're paying a little more. Home heating oil is $2 exactly. That's interesting. Maddie, we got for us Trevi with the sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a crash now on the outbound Eisenhower westbound just before Costner Avenue. That's causing stop and go traffic, so keep that in mind if you're heading west on I-290 heading out toward I-88. No issues on the Edens, steady traffic on the Kennedy, but no accidents to report. Same for the Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking good. We had an earlier crash on the Bishop Ford, but that's all clear. We do have an issue on Lakeshore Drive. Looks like a stalled CTA bus on the right shoulder, southbound at 18th Drive on the south side.
I hate it when that happens.
Yes, a stalled CTA bus. So that's causing a bit of a slowdown on Lakeshore Drive. As far as the rest of the expressways, everything else is looking okay. Off the expressways, there's debris on the road, North Shore, Route 41 southbound at Martin Luther King Jr. Drive. And then out in Naperville, it looks like we have a crash, but went away on my screen, so I can't tell you.
When you say debris, you mean somebody was hauling a mattress on the roof with the arm out holding it and it didn't hold it or something?
That's very possible. Now the address came up here. It's Burr Oak Road at Eisenhower Lane out near Naperville in the western suburbs. There's a crash there. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, lots of clouds early, but then we could see some sunshine this afternoon. A relatively mild high of 42 degrees. Right now it's cloudy and 29 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast with a high of 73. Right now it's partly cloudy and 57. In sports, Bulls were blown out in Detroit 131-108. Suns beat the Warriors 115-111. Blackhawks and Coyotes were both off. College hoops, Bradley will represent the state of Illinois in the NCAA tournament. They'll likely be the only team from Illinois, barring a miracle run by DePaul or Illinois this week in their conference tournaments. Bradley came back from 18 points down to Northern Iowa to beat the Panthers 57-54 to win the Missouri Valley Conference tournament down in St. Louis. So they'll get their seed come Selection Sunday here in 6 days. Illinois wrapped up their regular season losing big at Penn State 72-56.
So in Illinois, you got Bradley piling in. Indiana, you got Purdue. Illinois or Indiana's not going to make it, are they?
They're right on the bubble. They got really hot here at the end, and they're right on the bubble. Purdue's a lock. I mean, they're really good. But Notre Dame's out. Butler's out. Yeah, so it'll be Purdue for sure, and then maybe
Indiana. No Indiana State,
no Evansville, nothing like that.
No, it's David, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
Well, David's an Indiana sort of guy. He went to Indiana for grad school.
They won when I was there.
Well, that was back when...
Bobby Knight.
I was going to say Dr. Naismith, you know.
That I don't think.
anyway, the David, what do you make of all this? We got Boeing. This is one hell of a move, huh? I got him down off $49.
Just technically, I mean, I don't know how far this investigation goes or how many countries ground, you know, the jets in question, and if it's part of a, you know, the Chinese, you know, they grounded them, and so is that because they grounded them, or is it because of trying to bulk up their negotiating power in the trade deal? Hard to say. Just technically, the huge support in the stock at the 200-day moving average and some Bollinger, extended Bollinger bands in the 360 to 363 area, which is about another $10 lower than where it's been in the pre-market. And I've been waiting for that stock. Some folks want, you know, some little pieces, you know, to round out portfolios. And I, $10 more, if it settles down, not today. I don't like buying a first huge break, but if it's around $10-$12 lower tomorrow or the next day, I might nibble at it.
I have mixed feelings about this, David. Obviously, I you know, 20 years from now, I have a feeling Boeing's going to be still around and being a pretty darn good company. I just
they've got a 20-year backlog.
I know, but they have 500 of them are these things. 500.
Okay.
And, well, I mean,
it's 10 months.
Well, I mean, that's all I'm saying.
Nine months production.
500 planes?
Yeah, they're doing 57 a month.
Okay. But I'm saying the future for Boeing is this plane, pretty much. They're a big hottest seller by far.
Oh, I don't know. But I don't know the details, but they're heavily involved in the space program now. They're in defense. I'm talking
about their commercial side.
Statement.
I'm talking about their commercial side.
One side is heavily based in this
I
one
think
plane.
That, I'm saying it is with the
I
space
would,
program.
I would back off saying their future is in this plane.
It is. By far their highest profit item, because they've been making them for 50 years, for God's sake.
Okay.
Same tooling, same everything. They make way more in terms of margin on one of these things than they do on a 787.
And the Airbus had, you know, two groundings in the last 5 months as well. So where are country is going to get their jets when the depreciated and the life are rapidly forcing them to buy.
I get that part.
If Airbus has two groundings, and now this is the second incident for Boeing, are you going to make them? And I don't want to be facetious, but seriously, it's a duopoly worldwide.
Which is a mistake, but that's we're not going to fix that. But I'm saying I've never seen anything potentially. Have you ever seen two brand new planes go down nose down 6 minutes? I mean, unless there's something they can do a fix pretty quick, David. I mean, this is serious crap.
I don't know. I mean, and that's opened the question. I mean, suppose not me, not you, but impartial folks from the Transportation Board, Safety Board. You know, they were saying that one of the, barring, you know, a mechanical or a specific part problem, which at least right now is not known, that they think that, you know, part of the issue is that the pilots haven't had extensive training enough to really know this particular jet.
The world is full of stories where dead pilots are pilot error.
Well, it's not. They're not even saying pilot error. They're blaming whether it's the companies themselves or Boeing per se that are not, you know, giving enough training, 8,000 hours or whatever, you know, some extraordinary amount of time, and that, you know, airline companies or Boeing itself have skirted the training schedule to get these, you know, in the air.
Okay, I'm just.
I don't know. I don't. I'm just, you know, translating the speculation that was on CNBC this morning.
I'll go back to the history of the DC-10s. And Matty, can you? You're good at this. I'm going to say 8 to 10% of all DC-10s that were made crashed. Is that, or am I way too high with that? Man, if you could find that out, it's got to be. Just Google up DC-10s, and you look at the process. And I'm going to say that McDonnell Douglas didn't have anywhere near the political cachet as Boeing has now. And yet,
I'm sure you're right.
And when the first one went down, and they knew what it was, okay, because actually the first one, the guy got the thing. Quick story. Because of the makeup of the DC-10, if people don't remember, it was an engine under each wing, and there was an engine on the tail. Because of that peculiar makeup, you actually could fly the thing without using the rudders or anything like that. Because if you increased the power in the first two, the thing went up. If you increased the power in the tail, one, it went down. So you actually could, in a simulator, learn how to damn near fly it without your hydraulics. Well, this pilot, somewhere along the line in Canada, just loved being in the simulator, so he did. Well, his plane, the floor blew out. Okay, there was a cargo door that when you went to close it, guys like David and me and Matty, you'd go to close the door, and the hinge wouldn't close. So you knew it wasn't closed right, but if you pushed hard on the hinge wasn't strong enough, David. It would actually bend inside. And a strong guy would bend, you know, there was like the two fork, you know, a two piece of metal went in, it would actually bend. So you would think the thing was closed, and it wasn't. So what happened is when you got up to a certain height, because the inside's pressurized, this door would blow. And since all your hydraulics were in the floor, the air rushing out would essentially blow the floor and cut the hydraulics. And that's why the plane... Remember the guy that almost got down in Sioux City, Iowa? Same issue. The one... there was somebody else in Paris. There was the same issue. And these things, they had problems. And the McDonnell Douglas said, no, we're not going to ground them. We're just going to bring them in for normal maintenance, and we'll change all the fittings on that locking device. And a plane went down in the meantime. You know, and there's people on these things that people love, right? You know, fathers, kids, whatever, mothers. I mean, you know, now I'm going to say that.
By the way, they produced 386 of them. There was 32 accidents, which would be 8%. So you're right there. But if you count incidents and not, you know, accidents that were beyond repair, there was 55, so there would be even a higher percentage.
Yeah. That's way too many. 10%, for God's sake.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But basically none since 1998.
No, once they fixed all that stuff.
They fixed all that stuff that was going wrong for 30 years.
For 30 years, essentially. You know, so I mean, the incidents here is what I don't want to find out. I absolutely do not want to find out. I'd put people in the stocks. Is if it turns out that whatever the problem is, they should have grounded the whole fleet and fixed it because of the first one, and now here's the second one. That's what I don't want to see, David. I mean, it took me the whole show to get this right. And you know what? If that happens, I got problems with the regulators. I got problems with Boeing. I mean, you know what? And if people go to jail, I don't care. You know, matter of fact, I'd probably love it. But if it's totally separate things, well, then, you know, okay, fine. I mean, stuff happens. I get that part. But
by the way, in what you were referring to as far as the engine, I guess it's two different companies. I don't know if they work jointly or not, but it's United Technologies, something called CFM. CFM is a joint venture between GE and something, I think it's European, Safran, S-A-F-R-A-N-S-A.
Those are the guys, I think, that do the Airbuses. I think those are the guys who do the Airbuses, aren't they? The Airbus engines?
They do the Airbus as well.
Well, you're only down to two. Well, I guess the guys from Bombardier do some, but you're basically down to two manufacturers, and you're right. Well, Rolls-Royce does the engines for what? The seven? They still do engines. So it's Rolls-Royce, yeah. Pratt and Whitney, and GE, right? And then there's the people from Europe. All right, David. So we've got big down week last week, starting Monday morning, which was an odd day. We were way up, and then we turned it a 50-point spool move. And Friday, I guess we somewhat could have predicted we would probably get some short covering on the close, and we did. Almost made it back to even on the day when it was looking pretty ugly earlier. And now today, with the exception of Boeing, we're pretty strong. That mean last week's okay. We got the Chinese markets bouncing again today. Obviously, all eyes would be, gee, there must be some progress in the China thing, but God, how many days are we going to be feeding off that one? On again, off again.
It might be years.
It might.
I mean, because to me, I mean, I just don't think that the entire structure of the Chinese economy is going to change. Now, if they do actually agree and follow through, which is questionable, on the currency thing, that they're not going to weaken the yuan to, you know, help their trade balance, then you know, that's pretty good progress, even if they don't really do the forced, you know, partnerships in the intellectual property, which I don't expect. So it may be a little better than what the touts are, but as far as long-term, you know, gains in the areas that we really would like, I think that's going to take years.
Well, David, I'm not one of these what's the political group that everything's all our fault? I'm not one of those guys. I'm not the Catholics bleep happens, but I probably deserve it. You know, I'm not one of those guys. But somehow or another, accusing the Chinese, who I'll accuse them of anything because I don't think I can necessarily trust them, but their yuan was pegged at a dollar for years. So the extent that they manipulated it, aren't we the pot calling the kettle black? And somewhat of weren't they tied to the dollar for a while, a long while?
You know, I don't know I know the Hong Kong dollar was. Not just when the British, you know, when it was a British possession or whatever you want to call it, but for years after that, into the 90s, I know the Hong Kong dollar was pegged to the U.S. dollar. I don't know whether it still is. As far as the yuan, I'm not sure. I think that floated to an extent, but there were like, and I think there still are kind of bands that they try and keep it within, just so that there is a quote-unquote tie to the U.S. dollar, but it still kind of fluctuates more than what the Hong Kong dollar does.
Well, but I mean, even the changes in the yuan in the last couple of years, they keep wanting to drop it a little bit. I mean, look at the fluctuations in the U.S. dollar versus the euro versus the pound. The dollar flies around way more than the yuan.
Yeah, no question. I mean, look at the pound.
Yeah.
I mean, I can remember it was $2.50, then $1.10, and now what, $1.30.
Well, didn't the euro make it to parity once? I think it did.
Below.
Below. Okay.
I think it was 94 cents or something.
Well, how in this?
And then to like $1.45 or $1.47. So yeah, it's huge.
Well, Steph wanted to get into us today with the Brexit because she's kind of on the opposite side of the fence of me on this one. But I don't know how. I can necessarily argue with me on this one. I don't know the exact what's going on over there. You couldn't put me in the negotiations, but it's very obvious to me that the powers to be in England didn't want to move. And yet they've got this vote that says they have to. And they keep coming back with horrible deal after horrible deal, which I believe the real intention is to have the people so tired of it that they finally declare another vote and they decide to stay. To me, that's unconscionable, David. Am I wrong with this? I mean, everybody thinks I am, and you know, everybody's probably right. What do you think, Matty? Am I just being contrary and stubborn? But, I mean, Theresa May, I don't think, wanted to leave. So she keeps coming back with one horrible deal after next.
I think you're right. I think that a lot of people realize that maybe it wasn't the right decision, but either way, they voted the way they voted, and the politicians need to act accordingly.
Well, you think they're going to? It's been a long time.
They should.
What's your prediction?
Well, I think they're going to keep trying to stall it as long as they can, which they have been.
Yeah. And, you know, and the people in Europe are making it as painful as possible, which you knew that was going to happen because you're not going to get a cut in pay if you start losing members, or you're going to get a cut in pay. I think it's the European economies are not so good, David. I don't know how the EU takes the loss on all these bonds that they paid above even on interest rates. I mean, what are they going to do with that paper?
I mean, I have no idea. It's a mess because I think you're right that the thing about Theresa May is, though, I mean, she wants to abide by the election. She does not want a second election. She feels that that's just wrong to ignore the outcome of a vote, a referendum, not an election. To ignore the results of the referendum. And yet, you know, there doesn't seem to be a good deal on the table at all, and she's gone back to every, you know, place, especially, you know, the banking institutions, the EU and Belgium, and she doesn't get it.
Well, I mean,
Austria, she's been, Germany, she's been everywhere, it doesn't help.
But why, what isn't there, they're trying to make it as miserable as possible for them because they don't want Italy or somebody else to do the same thing.
So
some point you're just going to have to say, you know what, we're just out. You know, then we'll just see what the new deal comes and we'll see how you guys land. Cause they're going to end up doing trade with somebody in Europe. I mean, plus they could trade more with us here. I mean, it's going to be painful for a while, but I think you're going to have to call their bluff at some point. And they're just not willing to do that, doesn't appear.
Right.
I don't,
it's a mess.
So, we've got gold slipping a little bit. We've got oil relatively strong. Evidently, the Saudis are sticking with their supply cut. And we have a little bit of drop here in rig activity. We've got gasoline up, really, 30, 40 cents in the last, I'm going to say, 10, 12 weeks, right, David? So there's some movement around the place. Do you see a trade here in any of this stuff?
I mean, it's tough to find one. I mean, I've been calling in for a correction in the market, stock market. It hasn't happened. It never did get over the 28.15, you know, in the S&P futures.
Yeah, pretty
it got
close last
like
Monday
2016.
Morning.
Never could close there. It was the fourth time up. It's hard for me to believe that the market's going to give, you know, the sellers four times to sell at the same point. It's a quadruple top. If it is, then the S&P, I think, is going back to 2350. But I really think the downside is going to be capped around 2600. I think there's another 4.5% downside. And then I think the market ought to bottom. And then I think it'll not only test the 2800 to 2815, I think it'll go through it. So I'm not bullish here, and I wouldn't buy it here, but I think another 3-4.5% down, I think you buy it.
Well, can the if the economy slows, there's be a few ifs here in a row. If the economy slows, which it appears a lot of people think it is, and in fact, our producer Mr. Weber thinks that a lot of people are getting laid off, and not thinks, he obviously knows they are. And everybody now, the talking heads are all saying we've seen the slowdown in the last 6 weeks. If the slowdown does sort of happen, is the Fed capable of just printing more money and making that painless to stockholders, painless to asset holders, painless like they've been able to do for 8 or 9 years? I just get this weird feeling, David, that game is kind of run out. They'll help some, but I don't know if they can help it all the way.
Well, they can stop, you know, they could stop the drawdowns on the balance sheet, then they can cut rates. They do have a little bit of ammunition in the tank.
Except for,
and I think you're right. I think they're overall easing and accommodative, and then oh, geez, Europe's slowing, and oh, China's, you know, GDP is down. I think the game is played out, but they have a few tools at least for the short term.
Well, we have to go. Let's talk about it on Thursday. But one of my buddies that Maddie knows, I talked to him once in a while at the Tripoli. He used to be in the federal funds rate business because he'd borrow the money and was one of the guys who shoved it around from bank to bank at night, shoved it around, such a bad term. I'll explain more of this on Thursday, but he goes, there is no federal funds market. It's just the Fed paying people interest. Because there's no federal funds market. It's gone. I mean, the Fed is disingenuous, what are you even talking about? S&P futures up 675, NASDAQ futures up 31, Dow futures still down 150, Boeing down 47.65 because of that plane crash. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.